importance of reaching a new goal. Instead, it should simply focus on what sparks joy. Play could be going for a run because it's fun to move your body, not because you're trying to get your 10,000 steps that day. Play could be doing a craft or baking bread or cooking a dish if that feels fun, or dancing in your kitchen to that song you loved in college. Number three, find humor in the everyday. It's easy to laugh less when your life circumstances become stressful, but it's in these moments when laughter is most essential. Number four, build a strong community. Friendships make us who we are, and they can also help us survive some of life's greatest hardships. If you want to share Encouragementology with a friend who needs to know they're not alone in this journey of self-discovery, you can visit encouragementology.com or anywhere you stream your content to receive this episode and all others. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram for additional encouragement throughout the week. So I challenge you, this week, observe which wolf you're feeding with your thoughts and actions. Make conscious choices to nourish your positive wolf and watch how your inner landscape transforms. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges.
I stumbled through until the path was clear. That's when I found you, how I wound up here. There's a rock that I can lean on.
Friday, March 14th at 8 p.m., KBOO makes everything metal. The Metal March returns again in 2025, featuring 10 hours of live bands and DJ sets from your favorite KBOO metal hosts. March 4th and support metal on KBOO. Text KBOO to 44321 or go to kboo.fm/give to donate and tune in to the Metal March Friday, March 14th at 8 p.m. through Saturday, March 15th at 6 a.m. Metal takes over the airwaves for the Metal March Metal Marathon, only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience, produced at a different location every week.
We did not know at the time how bad this would be for us financially, and the price ticket for us of SPD closing has only gone up. At first, we assumed it would essentially be the $17,000 that they owed us in royalties at the time of their closing. Then we found out that we would have to pay more than a dollar per book to withdraw the stock that had been abandoned in another company's warehouse, and we had 18,000 books in those warehouses.
I'm Martha Senator of Listen and Be Heard in Greenville, South Carolina. Today on Sprouts, we are discussing how indie publishers, micro presses, and authors are coping after the closing of small press distribution in April of 2024. Free speech can be stifled in many ways on the path to publication. One way is to never be published at all. Another way is for a book to be denied distribution. Small press distribution, known as SPD, was relied on by more than 300 small presses around the United States to place their titles into bookstores and universities. Without that vital connection between publisher and seller, a book has nowhere to go to be seen, purchased or borrowed, and read. The abrupt closure of SPD, who served that vital role for small presses, left a bare spot in the literary landscape. Many titles have gone out of print for lack of a replacement distributor. To learn more about the unfolding drama, I am speaking with poet, author, and editor Eileen Tabios, publisher Diane Cattell of Black Lawrence Press, and Annie Groover and Kate McMullen from Hub City Bookstore and Publishers in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Thank you all for being here today. I'd like to start by talking about how it felt back in March and April. And Eileen, your book was just coming out.
It was just coming out. What's interesting is that I had two books come out that year. So the other was a poetry collection, Because I Love You, I Become War. So I could actually compare the before and after SPD demise based on looking at those two books. So one statistic that came out is that SPD had a good, I thought, library placement system. So for my book that came out before SPD went down, the last time I checked, it had over 20 libraries had ordered my book. The book that came out after SPD demise, the last time I checked, it still had only 7 libraries, so it ordered that book. So just by comparing the library placement statistics, you could see the effect on those, you know, whether it's SPD existed to distribute my particular books. What's interesting is that beyond those two books, I actually had a dozen books. I'm prolific. So I had a dozen books affected by SPD's demise. And I see that 8 of them became out of print as a result of SPD's demise.
Well, that seems like a pretty dramatic testimony to the influence of small press distributors. Diane Cattell, I got your newsletter. I've subscribed to the Black Lawrence Press newsletter, and that was actually how I learned about the closure of SPD and read your appeal to people who were interested in keeping your books and titles going. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how you felt back then.
I only knew at the beginning that it would be very bad for publishers and authors alike, and that we would have a long road ahead of us to sorting this out. I thought at the time, this will be the end for some very small presses. We don't yet have, you know, sort of a fatality count for how many presses actually will go under because of this. But one of the things that was very important about SPD is that they made space for the tiniest of presses, the micro presses. I think the metric was something like you had to publish one book every 2 years to be one of their presses. There are no other distributors that will take presses of that scale. I know for a fact, because of conversations that I had, that there are other presses that are much smaller that simply cannot find distribution, and distribution is so key. So I knew that it was going to be bad, and I also knew that we had to act really quickly to try and right the ship. So we sent out a newsletter. We immediately explained our situation and asked for donations. Black Lawrence Press is not a nonprofit. We're a small women-run business based in New York State. So we unfortunately were not eligible for any of the grants or the funding. So it really came from our communities of authors and writers and people that read and support our books. We did not know at the time how bad this would be for us financially. And the price ticket for us of SPD closing has only gone up. At first, we assumed it would essentially be the $17,000 that they owed us in royalties at the time of their closing. Then we found out that we would have to pay more than a dollar per book to withdraw the stock that had been abandoned in another company's warehouse, and we had 18,000 books in those warehouses. And then we also had to calculate in the immense opportunity cost of not having a distributor and basically receiving no distribution royalties for, now that we're looking at the fall, almost 12 months. So as I said, I knew that it would be bad. And now looking at it, you know, half a year later, my prediction was right. It was very, very bad. We are limping along for the very first time this month, for the very first time in the press's history. We have taken out a loan to keep us afloat until we do receive our first royalties from our new distributor. And, you know, in the meantime, you know, focusing the light back on our authors, this has been incredibly hard for our authors that have been on book tours, that have been trying to launch new books and have been showing up to places to say, oh, we're so sorry, we couldn't get your book.
How are you actually dealing with that now? Have you made the time maybe to do some of these distribution tasks that SPD was taking on? Diane?
So what we did in the interim is essentially, you know, went on our knees and said to everybody, please allow us to serve as our own distributor for this short period of time. And that sort of worked. You know, I work out of my home. I have a room that is dedicated to just Black Lawrence Press book storage. I have over 10,000 Black Lawrence Press volumes in my house. So I knew that I could handle it in the short term. And, you know, that's basically what we had to do for 4 to 5 months as we were getting set up with a new distributor. And, you know, As was mentioned earlier, moving to a new distributor is actually quite a big process. If you think about every little piece of information about a book, the ISBN, the price number, a file for the cover art, blurbs, it goes on and on. For every single book, and we have over 400 in print, each of those pieces of information has to go to the new distributor.
And how, I'm sorry, if I could just ask right there, how many distributors did you actually have? What was the landscape to choose from? Because we're talking about how unique SPD was. What are the limitations of your choices without them?
Unlike smaller presses that are, some of them are still trying to find new distribution, we were in the very fortunate position of simply being an older and more established press. Black Lawrence Press is celebrating its 20th year in business this year. As I mentioned, we've published over 400 books. And so we actually had distributors competing for our business. So that was one piece in this very challenging time that was quite fortunate.
Now that Eileen, the landscape has shrunk even more with the closure of SPD. What is it like in that environment that we then have to, as a publishing community, examine about how to survive in independent environment?
I would say today I'm about to be published, my next two coming books. My second novel is being published by a Big Five publisher, but my other new novel forthcoming is a children's book published by literally a Kitchen House Press. And it seems to me that, it'll be very interesting for me to compare in 2025 what it's like to be distributed by the two radical extremes, a Big Five publisher and a community press, an indie press. But it seems to me, even when you have small presses and indie presses picked up by distributors that are bigger and one would think are financially more stable than SPD was, what actually happens, and I hope I'm not being too cynical, is that just because you're picked up by a big distributor doesn't mean that the small press is getting sufficient attention. It's because you now have the competition from all sorts of other presses. And so I think this means that looking for the future, small presses, and part of the assets of small presses have always been their community networks. If you do not have a backing of a, quote, some type of community, I don't see how a small press or an indie press can survive. I would say 90% plus of your support, whether it's from sales or others, are from your community. That's like inherent in what a small press or indie press is about.
And I see you nodding your head, Kate, from Hub City Publishing. Maybe you could give a little perspective. I think that you still are actually the only indie publisher in South Carolina. And I do know that you focus on Southern writers and try to represent that community. So is that ringing true to you?
Yeah, it's we're almost kind of crowdfunded. There is not a lot of grant funding other than kind of the typical, you know, National Endowment for the Arts and other, you know, regional NEA affiliates, state funding. There's just not a lot of like publishing funding around here. But I do think we've had success, you know, kind of pushing our Southern agenda a little bit, which is really exciting. But it does mean our sales reps from PGW have to want to push the books. They like our books, which is great. But when they're going out on calls, they're a great team. They're the second largest, I think, sales force outside of Penguin Random House. So they have a really, you know, a great like presence in the market and in indie bookstores. But they have to be pushing your book if they like it that particular season. They have to pick it to pitch it Winter Institute or some of these other trade shows. And if we miss out on that, that's not something that's happening for us. So again, we still really rely on a lot of our really strong relationships with bookstores in the South.
Annie, do you have a little more to add to that as like being part of a larger mission, the Hub City mission, I guess, which seems to be all literary in nature, and you actually do have a reach out arm, like a community outreach arm of what you're doing as well?
Yes, we do have an outreach. We partner with a lot of Title I schools, things like that. We do work hand in hand with the press. Our bookshop does reflect the interests of the press. We have, you know, a Southern literature section. We have a lot of literary fiction. And to try to balance that also with just being the bookshop where you bring your kid to get, you know, a Dr. Seuss book, that kind of thing. So it's it is kind of an ecosystem. And it's a unique one to our area. If we were 50 miles up the road, we could look totally different.
You're listening to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of global interest. I'm Martha Senator of Listen and Be Heard in Greenville, South Carolina. Today on Sprouts, we are talking about how small presses and authors are coping after the closing of small press distribution, known as SPD, in April of 2024. I'm speaking with Eileen Tabios, author, Diane Cattell, publisher of Black Lawrence Press, and Kate McMullen and Annie Groover from Hub City Press and Bookstore. Not only is small press distribution gone, but the whole media landscape has changed over those 55 years. People can get electronic versions of books. So maybe books are even changing, and the concept of distribution would have to change along with it. What has this closure made maybe have you contemplating in terms of electronic distribution and other forms of books, Diane Cattell?
Well, at Black Lawrence Press, and I'm sure that this is also true for, you know, my other small press editors in the room, you know, we were looking at ebooks, audiobooks, you know, other forms of you know, digital media for a while. At Black Lawrence Press, we do publish both poetry and prose, but poetry is a big part of our list. On a given year, it's somewhere between 60 and 70% of what we publish. And poetry does not translate well onto the digital page. You know, line breaks are essential to get right in poems. They're in some cases as important as the language itself.
One of the things about ebooks that's really wonderful for accessibility is that you can size up and size down the size of the text. Well, that will absolutely wreak havoc on line breaks. So we do not currently publish our poetry titles as ebooks. It's a decision we've made in communication and with the input of our authors. We tried a couple of titles and they wound up looking like just a mush of text on the page. And so that's one reason that we don't publish everything as ebooks. We do sell most of our prose titles as ebooks. Those sales continue. Our sales of print books are stronger than our sales of ebooks. And I do think that there is, you know, something that is, you know, a visceral pleasure of holding the book in your hand. I don't think that that's going to ever completely disappear. Certainly not in my lifetime as a publisher. So we've dipped our toe into the world of audiobooks. Audiobooks are very expensive to produce well and is an entirely different kind of marketing. So we will continue to work on those things. And I'll also say one of the reasons that we were so sad to see small press distribution close is it seemed that they were on the cusp of being able to offer more services to small presses, that they were going to start offering ebook distribution, potential audiobook distribution, even in international distribution. They were so close and unfortunately clearly fell short. So,
and is there anyone on the landscape who was maybe trying to step into those shoes?
I think the closest would be Asterism, in terms of, you know, trying to replace what SPD did. I know other presses that have gone with Asterism and are pleased with that. Asterism has a different model than SPD did. They offer some services that SPD didn't. They don't offer some services that SPD did. So it's not really a direct replacement, but I would say that they are the closest.
Okay. You wanted to add something?
I do. I do know for tiny, tiny micro presses that some of them, and I can't name names because I didn't see, you know, kind of who's doing what, but I do know that some really small presses are forming their own distribution co-ops together somehow. I think a lot of them are trading books and selling them, you know, direct to consumers through their own websites and that kind of thing, which is much more scrappy than something like SPD was able to provide and something like Asterism can provide now. But I do think a lot of the very small guys are trying to figure out how they can kind of come together and then go into distribution as a package or something like that. CLMP, the Community of Literary Partners, is working on webinars to, you know, help those people out. And there is kind of community effort, you know, literary community effort around it. But those are the presses that I'm the saddest about.
Yes, and I should mention CLMP. Their website actually has a lot of resources on there for people feeling the effects of this closure, and even now can go there and find maybe some helpful resources for their neck of the woods. Eileen Tabios?
I also wanted to add another option that my publisher, Marsh Hawk Press, has instituted that I think might be of become more common because of what's happened with SPD. As books go out of print, or as people decide not to reprint books because the huge demand isn't out there, you have two options. You could switch to either a print on demand model, or Marsh Hawk Press has started to put for free on its website the entire PDF of an out-of-print title. They've done it for two of my titles. And I'm actually very, very pleased with that, because as a poet, I noticed years ago that I get more readers through by making a poem available online than trying to sell it on a print version. So that's certainly one option, which lends itself well to something like poetry, because it's not as if hoarding poetry would make you a lot of money. So, you know, putting the poetry book online for free, although I suppose some people have done it and do charge an access fee. I personally wouldn't bother because the matter is poetry, but that's an option.
Well, I want to thank each and all of you for spending some time here with me today to talk about the closure of small press distribution and share your points of view. I'd like to give you each an opportunity maybe to make some final comments with your thoughts about this discussion that we've been having. I guess I'll start with you, Diane, the executive director of Black Lawrence Press.
Sure. I mean, I would say to anybody listening who wants to do something to support small presses and our authors, the very best thing you can do is to engage with the work that we are producing together. If the easiest way for you is to purchase one of those titles through, you know, Jeff Bezos' company, you can certainly do that. But it's even much more meaningful if you step into your local independent bookstore or purchase directly from the press through their websites. We are a rich and wonderful world of literature. I often say that deciding to only ever read from the big five publishers is deciding like you're only ever going to dine at chain restaurants. There are great chain restaurants. Some of them have Michelin stars, but you're not going to taste everything that's out there. So, you know, take a look at your reading diet and see if you have small press titles within it. They will enrich your world.
Well, thank you for that. And people can go to your website at
blacklawrencepress.com.
Thank you, Diane. And Kate McMullen, the managing editor of Hub City Press.
I just want to echo, yeah, all that Diane just said. Definitely, you know, a lot of these presses do like direct-to-consumer ordering, which is a really good way to do it if your bookshop is just not able to get that book in, especially as we've been talking about in the midst of all of this kind of turmoil here, now that SPD is no more. HubCity.org is where you can do that exact thing from Hub City Press. You can also donate to us. We're a nonprofit. You can learn more about, I won't go into it, but you can learn more about that at hubcity.org/support. Which is a great way, you know, to help us out. We're basically crowdfunded except for some grants here and there. And we have been for almost 30 years. So your support helps quite a lot.
Annie Groover, you're the manager of Hub City Bookshop in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Do you have some final comments for us today?
You know, you find some hidden gems in the smaller offbeat places. And I think indie bookshops, you know, I don't think they'll ever go away just because we can cultivate something for our public and, you know, and the broader culture as well. So I think it's just good to keep in mind that we have a vital mission, whether we're a nonprofit or not.
Well, thank you for that. And I guess it's similar to Hub City Press, but how can people go right to Hub City Bookshop?
It's the same website. It's hubcity.org, and you can see lovely pictures of our bookshop, more information about our press titles that Kate is in charge of, and yeah.
Well, thank you both for joining us. Hub City, the only indie publisher in South Carolina. Eileen Tavios, you're the prolific author in this scenario. Do you have some parting comments for us about just the whole landscape of publishing and distribution?
Thank you. I guess sometimes when I look at issues, I look at the systemic nature of these issues. And I think part of the challenges that small presses and indie presses face relate to how the system currently works. So my husband happens to be a lawyer, and I know that big law firms have this setup where it's called pro bono, where lawyers have to represent people for free for X percent of their business. So I think that maybe the publishing industry should have some sort of system where, and I don't know how bookshops and libraries work, but where, let's say, X percent of your inventory has to be from small presses, or X percent of what's bought into libraries have to be from small presses. Mm-hmm. Where you develop a system where you actually make that mandatory. And in a way, if I understand publishing history correctly, this used to exist at big publishing houses where, yes, they're publishing hopeful bestsellers, But those bestsellers, like fiction, were supposed to subsidize the more niche items like poetry or whatever. So I think those systems have to be, you know, strengthened or put back in place in support of the kind of books that are actually considered niche when, ironically, they're the ones expanding the landscape for the genre. So for example, in poetry, experimental poetry is among the least commercial, and yet they're the ones who are pushing outward and expanding the landscape for poetry. So I think if there were systems that supported, you know, the so-called niche or small presses, that would be great.
Sort of like research and development.
Yeah, yeah, oh, absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
Well, that sounds quite brilliant to me, Eileen. And thank you for that parting comment. I think it leaves us on a more positive note. I want to thank you all for joining me here. I hope you'll come back soon.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
This has been really a lovely conversation. I so appreciate it. And it's been nice to meet all of you too.
That's it for Sprouts. You have been listening to Sprouts, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. Special thanks to our guests, Eileen Tabios, Diane Cattell, Kate McMullen, and Annie Groover. Our contributors this week were Listen and Be Heard at WLBH.org in Greenville, South Carolina. Music you heard included the Listen and Be Heard theme by J. Rodriguez Sierra. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the globe. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase globally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's URS.